Major League Baseball begins its first work stoppage since the 94 season after owners and players failed to reach a new collective bargaining agreement. Plus, Omicron is already taking a hit on the travel industry, and more than half of Americans see China as the biggest threat.
Despite all the turmoil in the Middle East and certainly Afghanistan over the last several months, the recurring theme is China, China, China.
It's Thursday, December 2nd. I'm Peter Granitz at the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The White House is extending mask mandates on public transportation until mid-March. The rules for planes, buses, trains, and transportation hubs were set to expire next month. It's part of the administration's effort to curb the spread of COVID-19, and the announcement comes one day after the first case of the Omicron strain was detected in the U.S. The Congressional Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol has recommended holding Jeffrey Clark in contempt. Clark was a Department of Justice official in the Trump administration. He allegedly urged the department to subvert the 2020 election by announcing an investigation into election fraud. Last month, Clark left a deposition early, and panel members, including Republican Liz Cheney, say he refused to hand over documents.
Mr. Clark is refusing to answer questions that are not conceivably subject to any executive or other privilege claim.
Before the vote, Clark said he would now continue the deposition. The Women's Tennis Association is suspending all of its tournaments in China because it doubts that star Peng Shuai is safe. A post on one of her verified social media accounts last month accused a former vice premier of sexual assault. She vanished for 2 weeks, then reemerged at a youth tournament in Beijing and on a video call with the International Olympic Committee and the Chinese Olympic Committee. The WTA had 9 scheduled tournaments in China, but Chief Executive Steve Simon said he would willingly cut off one of the sport's largest business partners until Peng's status was clarified. And payment company Square is rebranding as Block. The name change comes days after founder Jack Dorsey left his job at Twitter. He had been the chief executive at both companies. The rebranding of Square, which he continues to run, reflects Dorsey's interest in the blockchain and cryptocurrencies. Square recently started to build a crypto exchange platform. We are just a week into life with the Omicron strain of COVID-19, and already we are witnessing the negative effects on the travel industry. EasyJet CEO Johan Lundgren says the discount air carrier is seeing weaker bookings. Passengers are preferring to hold off on travel until at least early next year. The news comes as governments restrict travel from several countries and require more stringent testing to enter. Caitlin Ostroff is with us. She's a markets reporter and is here to help us take stock of the travel industry. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Thanks for being here. How are things looking for the airlines right now?
Yeah, so some of the airlines are a little bit concerned that the Omicron variant is going to diminish travel. I think we're still waiting for news on whether the variant is likely to lead to more severe infections or whether it's going to be more evasive of the current vaccines. And so there's still a lot of unknowns with it, but there's certainly a concern that with the new variant, we could see people delaying travel plans, we could see conferences delayed and other things pushed back, and even just see more lockdowns and more quarantine measures reintroduced in different countries. And so things had been doing pretty well in the travel industry the last couple of weeks, especially as more people got comfortable flying again, and potentially this could be a hiccup.
Many of the new restrictions are on Southern Africa, which really isn't a major destination for much of the world. How big of an effect might these travel bans have?
I mean, for the airlines, as you said, you know, this is a small percentage of their global travel. But the fear is that you could have countries like Israel is shutting its borders to foreigners. You could also have more countries reintroduce restrictions if the cases from South Africa and other African countries, they were first identified there. If we start seeing that pop up in more countries and, you know, countries want to kind of clamp down on its spread, then even though those specific destinations aren't major moneymakers for travel, you know, they are potentially important in that they could be kind of the first domino to fall in a knock-on effect that we see with the broader travel industry.
And we should say it's not just flights though, right? I mean, this is conferences and all sorts of other big gatherings.
Yeah, you won't just see like international travel affected here. Local travel, business conferences, people going to parties, other events, Christmas markets. We are already starting to see some people kind of sit there and go, maybe there won't be Christmas markets, or maybe we'll delay this business conference, or kind of everyone is a little bit on hold right now just because we still don't really know what is happening. And so potentially it's a step back.
And that affects the leisure stocks in turn, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've had the leisure and travel stocks kind of bouncing back and forth. It's really, the market kind of seems to just not know where this is heading, which frankly, none of us do. And so it's reacting to every bit of news. If you have one headline that says maybe the vaccine won't be as effective, everything all of a sudden turns sour. And if you have one headline saying maybe the severity of infection is not that great, all of a sudden things look rosy again. And so we're kind of oscillating back and forth in a lot of these stocks until we wind up getting clarity, probably not for a week or two, on either the vaccine efficacy or the severity of the disease of the new variant.
Caitlin, thank you.
Thanks.
That is Caitlin Ostroff. She's a markets reporter. Coming up, assessing the Chinese threat to the United States. More than half of Americans see China as their top foe. So how serious is it? That's after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Americans see China as the biggest security threat to the United States. A new poll commissioned by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation found 52% of Americans see China as the country's top foe. It comes as the U.S. looks to improve bases in the Asia-Pacific region. Earlier today, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin vowed the U.S. would maintain its capability to deter potential Chinese threats.
We know that China conducted a test of a hypersonic weapon on the 27th of July. The pursuit of those capabilities increases tensions in the region.
Gordon Leubolt covers the Pentagon for us, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thank you. It doesn't sound all that surprising that half of the U.S. sees China as the primary threat. Hasn't the U.S. government seen it that way for years?
So it's an interesting question because on some level, it is surprising to me because as a reporter who covers this, it can be a challenge to find ways to write stories from a national security standpoint that affect normal Americans and in their everyday lives, because some of the stuff we write about China's influence in the Middle East or things happening in the South China Sea are things that don't affect average Americans. There's a remarkable jump in the number of people who believe China is a security threat. And I think part of it is, yes, despite all the turmoil in the Middle East and certainly Afghanistan over the last several months, the recurring theme is China, China, China.
What kind of threat are we talking about here? Is this the American public sees China as a military threat, or is it something else?
So the military threat is kind of like maybe the animating threat that people may see. I think Americans are hearing more and more about China as a rising power. It's doing things that can be perceived as a bit nefarious around the world, concerned about trade and the economy and kind of the ability of China to create this narrative and build on this narrative as it's a rising power. And that, on some level, I think probably affects a lot of Americans thinking about it being a security threat. But the military is where you see a more ambitious military, Navy, modernization plans that really eclipse the ability of the U.S. military to kind of keep up. So I think that's kind of part of what you're seeing.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that. I mean, how capable is China's military? Isn't it building a second aircraft carrier, which is an offensive weapon?
Yes. And so its modernization is of its military is robust, and it's moving forward on building more ships, carriers included. And at the same time, the U.S., have 178 ships, Navy ships, and they're trying to get to a goal of 355 ships, but there's all kinds of budget problems and manufacturing problems or whatever. Meanwhile, China is turning out its modernization plans and building stuff. And as we saw recently, tested again a hypersonic missile, and this was probably punctuated the idea that they are really moving much faster than the U.S. on that technology, as an example. And so it's a worrying concern.
So is the U.S. repositioning its assets? It's moving things out of the Middle East and around the world?
So it is and it isn't. It's a complicated question because this has been a tension since before President Obama was trying to do the quote-unquote Asia pivot, which was largely empty in terms of actually moving military capabilities and forces to the region. There's more of a consensus that that's what has to happen. But I think what the Biden administration is finding is when it gets down to it, devil is in the details, because it's hard to just pull everything out. They're experiencing problems now. And when it comes to, you talk about China, I mean, there's a story recently about China's growing influence and attempts at growing influence in the Gulf, in particular in the UAE. And so if the Gulf allies are seeing the U.S. pulling out of the region, they're, you know, and China's offering up its economic might, its military, different capabilities, there's a tension there. So I think the Biden administration is realizing, like, it's not just so simple just to leave the Middle East.
Does this feel like there's shades of a new Cold War?
Certainly, there's an argument that there are shades of a new Cold War. We're certainly going into a more pronounced version of some kind of non-kinetic conflict with China, and there's concerns that a miscalculation on either side could trigger an actual crisis. So it's a little unclear, but check back and we can maybe make a better assessment in coming months.
That is National Security Reporter Gordon Lobold. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And finally, it's the offseason, but there is no baseball. Owners locked out players at midnight after the two sides failed to agree to a new collective bargaining agreement. Spring training doesn't start till February, so there's still some time to sort out their differences. Newly minted Mets pitcher Max Scherzer says the previous CBA killed competition in the league. It allowed teams to tank their seasons to land better draft picks.
We're trying to make the game more competitive through various means. There's so many different ways that we, as players as a whole, that we believe that we can make the game better. And we're absolutely committed to doing that. And when I hear that every other player, whether young or old, we're all saying the same thing, clubhouse to clubhouse. And it's obvious to all the players.
Owners say they don't need the overhaul. As for money, Scherzer's doing okay. He just signed a contract worth $130 million. And that's what's news for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.